This is the best of two pros and a cup of Joe with LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, and Jonas Knox on Fox Sports Radio.
Did you guys see what the NFL did Friday night? Did you guys see the little trick they pulled Friday night?
Tell me. Expose it.
Well, you know, they like to do news dumps, right? They call it a news dump where they try to hide something that was reported.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And one of the best ways of hiding something that, you know, maybe you want to be covered up by a Saturday of college football and a Sunday of NFL football and maybe Monday night football. Something you do, okay, is you just push something out to the Associated Press late at night on a Friday night that somehow, of the 650,000 emails that the NFL had sorted through and investigated with the Washington football team, John Gruden is the only thing they found from that report.
Yeah. Amazing. I'm still like trying to figure that one out.
It's amazing.
I'm not trying to figure it out. It's a full-blown, there's more to this. This is some...
Of course.
There's just some BS, man.
Now, I know what you're thinking. Man, the NFL got away with that one because they dropped it on a Friday. Oh, don't worry. Here on the weekend overnights, they got a battle axe from yours truly there, because it is a bunch of crap. It's the NFL that thinks people are idiots, and they actually buy into this theory or notion that there's no other 650,000 emails, and they figured out the only two that were offensive in nature. That organization's reputation, all of that, and they found the only two or three correspondents involving John Gruden, and of the 650,000, the other 649,997 were squeaky clean.
Is that the rabbit hole we're going down at 328, 628?
I mean, well, listen, you know, it's fair.
We don't have to go
anybody's
down a rabbit
fair play
hole. Let's just call what it is, man. It's some BS.
They're full of
crap.
There's
way more to this.
Yes.
And, yeah.
I'm just glad you guys are doing it, because if I'm doing it, I'm a disgruntled former player that's like, oh, you want to see them go down.
But it's not
even – you want to see them burn.
It's not even the Washington football team that you want to see go down. It's the hypocrisy of the NFL.
Oof.
Like, they want to act like they care, and then they turn their back, or they treat an identical situation, or they treat something else different. And they hide under the guise of, well, every situation is unique. And it's like, well, yeah, but didn't you come up with a standard protocol and way you were handling any sort of domestic violence? Like, do you remember how they were like, oh, automatic 6-game suspension? But, you know, that's only in certain cases. Like, it's the hypocrisy of the NFL and the initiatives that they push in one way, and they talk out of the other side of the mouth. That's what frustrates me about it, no matter what we're talking about, whether it's officiating, whether it's gambling, whether it's off-the-field issues with players or this sort of thing. It's just the whole thing. They're just one big giant hypocrite. That's what it is right now.
This is the best part about all of it. We got more about what was going on behind the scenes in regards to Tom Brady taking air out of a football than we did the 650,000 emails that they've tried to keep private and keep a secret, unless they wanted to drop one on Monday Night Football to make it seem like they got the culprit and everything squeaky clean.
Here's what people have to understand about this is the amount of detailed logging in an investigation that needed to take place. What point, I wonder what page were those emails with John Gruden?
Right.
What number was that? Where was that hidden in all of this? Right. And then that's probably one of the biggest questions is where in all of those emails that were used for an investigation.
Page 2, and they're like, well, we don't need to read
it. Oh, it was right there. We haven't even had to go any further, right?
Yeah, that'll be enough. That'll do.
Were they all together? Were these all one line of correspondence? Like, you know what I mean? And then the next question you got to ask yourself, honestly, because we kind of breezed over, like, the nude pictures and stuff like that. Like, now you got to ask yourself the question. What is worse than what it is that we uncovered on John Gruden? What's worse? Because there's worse.
Yes.
There is worse. You can bet the bank on it that is not the most vile of things that were in those emails and those correspondence. So, and as far as what you're saying, Brady, now the question becomes, if you have to look at what's worse in these emails, then what is the punishment? What is the course of action? What is the protocol? Because John Gruden had to leave. Like, he had to leave. And for all intents and purposes, he's ruined. Like, that has ruined. That's career suicide. He's ruined. He'll be able to do certain things. People that won't subscribe to what happened will still be proponents of John Gruden, and he can teach or coach whatever.
To your point, think about this. Let's say LeVar Arrington's having a celebrity golf outing. If John Gruden wants to come, can you advertise he's going to be there? Can you advertise anything? Like, the
I
second
have to get his sign off on it, right? You well, got well, if you're but, using
but,
somebody's
but
name.
But by the way, it was not even just that. I'm not saying about the sign off. I'm saying like other people around you, LeVar,
your
are
sponsors
say,
would complain.
The sponsors would. Your boys would.
Oh yeah.
There might be some people who are offended by this. Like something even as simple as that, like is it changes the dynamics of everything. So I just. That's the first thing that kind of bothers me about it. But you know what the problem is? Is Roger Goodell isn't going to try to – like, this was like a one-off instance where it obviously impacts the Raiders. But with the Washington football team, like, they're like, all right, nothing to see here. Moving on. And you're not going to get a big tumultuous or some sort of, greater investigation in all of this because Roger Goodell works for all these owners. I mean, that's the reality of it. And I don't think all these owners want a league-wide investigation into their correspondence. I mean, one, think about just with one team, 650,000 emails. Think about if you multiply that by 32 or 31 other teams that now you're sorting through to ensure their conduct and communication is above board.
And I think that that's the point. You're making the very point that this whole entire situation has drugged the National Football League into, because whether it happens or not, if you have any ounce of common sense, you don't have to be a scholar. You don't have to be this super, super, super smart rocket scientist or open heart surgeon. It takes common sense to come up with the conclusion you just came up with, Brady. Why, if this is what's going to happen to John Gruden, then why is it start and stop there? Why does it start and stop there?
And here's how you know that there's something worse in there than what happened with John Gruden, because they won't release it. That's how you know something was worse. And also, have you noticed, you've got all these people coming out wanting the other emails released. You've got Derek Carr. You've got players. You've got organizations. You've got the NFLPA. You've got the media. You know who's not saying, hey, release the other emails? NFL owners.
I'm telling you.
NFL owners are like, big game's on Sunday. What are you guys thinking? We'll give a promotion away, and we'll retire a jersey on 2 days' notice. Yeah, NFL owners want no part of this.
There are parties being discussed in there. There are gatherings and get-togethers being discussed in there. There's players that they like, that they don't like being discussed in there. There are ways to get rid of the players that it's being discussed in there.
Well, think about that time frame too. Colin Kaepernick. I don't think anyone would have talked about it over a team email to allow. Maybe they did. I have no idea, but that drums up that whole conversation. Like, we get to actually see the truth of what was said at that point in time. Who knows if it's about domestic violence and situations like Ray Rice or Greg Hardy or any other player that was a part of all that, right?
Like, and what is the – like, that? See, that's the thing. Now you're going down – we're going down that rabbit hole. And I told y'all last week, that rabbit hole leads to Wonderland. There isn't a dirt bottom. You're not going to just keep dirt. Nope. Whole new world. You done fell into a whole entirely different world. In fact, you can look for the Wizard of Oz in Wonderland, because it all comes together and it all meets at the end of this rabbit hole. Whatever it is you think it is, that golden brick road, whatever it is that's behind in the castle where the wizard is actually pedaling and squeaking horns and stuff like, whatever it is you thought it was, it's there, and there's more. And there's more. Because you know what those emails being released made me really understand and realize? for all these years, you try to dissect and understand how things happen the way that they happen or why they happen the way that they do. And then you realize that you're actually thinking on a much higher level and trying to figure something else out than what it really truly is. Those emails said to me, these are some simple dudes having simple conversations. Simple. That's simple-minded stuff. And those messages, you want to accuse them of being something? This is what you accuse them of being on. A simpleton. That's a. Those are simpletons. And so now you're talking about these guys are making decisions. This guy's making a decision for the front office of the Washington football team. This guy is the owner of the Washington football team. This guy runs something. This guy runs something. And they're all simpletons. Which means if you're a simpleton, you're not having high-level conversations. The things that we would read in those, it'd be like A, B, C, easy as 1, 2, 3, do, re, mi. Like, what the F is this?
But they're owners. What do you mean? I mean, these are the owners of the team.
And I think that if you expose how simple these guys really are, because, you know, one thing that I learned growing up, just super quick, is back when I was growing up, to see somebody famous, to see somebody popular, to be exposed to that was like a life changer. It's all different now. But back then, it was like, man, I can recall the things that I ended up aspiring to be and wanting to be were based off of my in-person interactions with Dwight White, with Jerome Bettis. These were my wit with some of the, and it's so funny that it was so many Notre Dame guys, because Ray Zellers is somebody. I got close to these guys and I started realizing that they're just like me. And once I realized that they were just like me, then I allowed my work ethic to carry me to where it was that I was going, because I realized that if I worked my ass off, I could get to where these guys that I've seen and have met are at right now. So the point is now if I start being exposed to the fact that these dudes are so sick, y'all, this simple, I could be an owner. Let me get my mind right. Let me figure out what I need to do. Let me put my chips together. Let me pull my network of people together, and I'll be damned if you hold me back from being able to do it. And that might be one of the biggest fears of all of this and biggest concerns of all of this is you sit there and you think that these people are so removed from what we are and what we represent, and then you realize that they're just like you. They're just like us.
Yeah.
You're no different. Your bank account may read a whole lot more zeros than what ours is. Fine, so be it. Right place, right time. I don't know. Generation, legacy play. Who knows? But this is what I do know. If you read the rest of those emails, you are going to see more Neanderthal, like nonsensible, just silliness of dudes acting like kids that are adults. That were never cool when they were growing up, never got the girl when they were growing up, never was the best football player when they were growing up, and they're living their dream around dudes that I could sit there and dap up Brady Quinn, and Brady Quinn's my dude, and we're going to go get dinner tonight. I'm going to go see Jay-Z tonight. We're going to go do this tonight, and we're going VIP, and we're going to go on the boat next week, and we're going to go on the plane tonight. Like, you are validating what you never were by being what you currently are. And I think that that's what those emails uncover.
There it is.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, listen.
Had a few things to say
about
that.
That's all right. Listen, and it's good to have a few things to say.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
You had yourself a classic matchup yesterday. Two teams with a lot of history, the Dallas Cowboys and the New England Patriots. Brady, you threw it out. The line seemed a little suspect to you. You couldn't figure out why the line was only 3 or 3.5, whatever it was, going into the game. And then I think we found out pretty quick, oh, okay, somebody must have known something. This was a lot more competitive than I think a lot of people realized.
I didn't foresee Mac Jones not throwing an incompletion until damn near the fourth quarter. I mean, he's got a really strong feel for not only the offense that they're running in New England, but I think more what he's being presented by defenses. And I know Josh McDaniels is going to put him in a good spot, Playing for Josh McDaniels is an absolute pleasure, really, as a quarterback, because he helps you feel so confident in what you're being asked to do within that play. Now, the execution is a whole different thing, but at least from the mental standpoint, and I'm sure if LeVar was like, yeah, man, when we had a blitz dialed up, we knew it was going to hit. Like, we were playing on tilt. We felt like we had a bit of an edge. That's how you feel playing in a Josh McDaniels system. But that being said, you know, he still, for a rookie, has done an extremely good job just executing, you know, what they're asking him to do. So maybe that was a portion of it, but that was like a circus at the end of that game.
Yeah.
With the Trayvon Diggs pick six and giving up a touchdown, and just how that went back and forth was incredible. But obviously Dallas still got the cover in the end.
Trayvon is the defensive player of the year right now. I mean, I haven't seen anything like that.
Who's going to surpass him? I guess I'll say this. Like, even if you want to say whatever other edge rusher or Miles Garrett or Aaron Donald, right, who you could probably give it to every year. What does he have, six interceptions now?
I mean, he's doing it every game.
And it's now, ridiculous.
And now he doubled down on it because he took it to the house on this one.
Right.
Like, he was a receiver. I've known
him. He's got two to the house. He's got more than Stephon Diggs has touchdown receptions.
Which is his older
Trayvon
brother.
Diggs has more pick sixes.
He was a receiver in high school. And even a receiver when he went to Alabama, I don't even know if that plays a part in it, because a lot of guys play both ways and played right on the other side of the ball. This is just amazing.
He's got seven picks, by the way.
That's just amazing.
Seven.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Every game he's got a pick. And he had two against Carolina.
Yeah, that is unheard of. And listen, here's what I'll say. I will say this. As far as with Dallas, you know, a lot of people were saying that I was homering out. I think, Jonas, you were one of the ones that was saying I was gushing over Dallas before the season got going. And even though, you know, we didn't know what Dak Prescott's health was going to be, I said this was going to be a vastly improved team from last year. And I said Dan Quinn is going to be the catalyst of this change. Now, I will say this. Dak Prescott is the catalyst of this team being as good as they are right now. But that defense is much improved. It's a different mentality, like we mentioned earlier, with the defense coordinator in Baltimore.
Dan
and Dan Quinn now and obviously in Dallas. And I just felt like the conclusion for Dallas is it is put to bed, it's put to rest if they are a legitimate contender. They are a legitimate contender because this was a hostile environment. This is a team that knows how to prepare, and they were able to pull this game out. These are games that they would have let get away from them in years past, a lot like how I talk about the Chargers. Now, to the other side of it, there is the idea and the feeling of confidence in what Mac Jones is bringing to the table. Everything you just said, Brady. But I was left – my takeaway from the game, and I'll pose this as a question to you guys. At what point in time, if any, does Bill Belichick have to be held accountable for not winning? If he doesn't start winning, like, let's think about this, right? They've come close to winning.
Yeah.
But they're not winning. So at what point if there is ever a point, do you sit there and you look at Bill Belichick and it's like, okay, like, it's time to start winning again? I mean, when Drew Bledsoe went out and Tom Brady came in, they went up. They went up. And so to me, we can't use the excuse. And listen, Brady was in his second season when that took place. So, yes, we're one season removed with Mac Jones. And I don't want to speak in hypotheticals because I think he's a fine quarterback. I don't know what the team will look like. But at what point, if they don't get this thing turned around, where is that breaking point where people start saying – Bill Belichick has got to start winning.
See, if Cam Newton were still the starting quarterback, I think the Heat would be a little bit I think it would be ratcheted up a little bit just because he's identified, okay, well, this is win now mode. I think Belichick's identified, listen, they're going to be growing pains. We're going to go through this, but Mac Jones is going to be better prepared. Next season, I think, is the fascinating season for New England, because then you're going to get Mac Jones in year two, and then we get to see what this team looks like with a quarterback who's got a full season under his belt. Like,
okay,
that to me.
Before I say this, I'll ask you guys this question. How much of LeVar's question about Belichick and the pressure has to do with the results of Tampa Bay with Tom Brady?
Everything.
Yeah.
I think he lit the fuse. I think the
But I'm saying this year. I'm saying if Tampa Bay wins it again.
Oh my gosh. Come on, bro. You answer that one. I think we all know that.
Yeah,
that gets a little bit insane.
I've thought about that myself, because nobody ball washes Belichick like I do, and I've already figured out ways to get out of that conversation, because I don't know how. Yeah, if Brady's got two on Belichick and both years the Patriots miss the playoffs, man, that's a lot of ground
to
make up.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because so they're 2-4 right now, okay?
Yeah.
They play the New York Jets at home next week. Oh, let's just call that a win.
Yes.
They get the 3-4.
You better hope they win, right? We got to hope they win.
They pounded them in New York the last time they played. So I'm going to say at home, I think they win. Yeah.
Okay.
Then after that, this is what gets really interesting, LeVar, to your point about, like, will he be held accountable? Three of the next four are on the road. At L.A., at Carolina, which maybe we're looking at that as a more winnable game now. They get Cleveland coming to their house, and then at Atlanta. So I would say, you know, of those four games, Carolina, Atlanta, they both seem winnable, but we know home field advantage now plays a factor. This year with fans being back in the stadium. So those aren't even necessarily as winnable as maybe we once thought they were. And then after that, it's Titans at Bills and a bye before they've got a four-game stretch to finish, which outside of playing the Jaguars and Dolphins to finish the season, I think they got their work cut out for them. I think I'm going to give them the win versus the Jags, Dolphins, and the Jets next week. That's five. I don't know I don't know where the rest of the wins really come from.
Listen, they're a 6-11 football team. Like that, like that's where we're at with the New England Patriots.
That's a step back from last year, though. Think about that.
But let me just say this.
Answer the question.
All right, so let me just say this: the New England Patriots of 2021 will be the best 6-11 football team in the history of the NFL. How's that? We good for that for a hot take?
Is that good?
Is that good to take away? It's just the first time we've had 17 games. So I figure they can claim that crown right now. Geez. Yes, it's a step back, but we're watching these games. This is why you can't look at box scores and you can't just look at the final record, because we're watching these games live. They're not that bad of a football team.
No, they're not.
They're just a little bit off. I'm telling you, they're just a step behind.
I'm with Jonas on this. I think they're an average football team right now in the NFL. They're not awful. They don't make those glaring. I mean, like, I don't watch their games and go, oh, that's a bad football team. Like, I just think they're missing some pieces still. They are young in some ways, but I think they get. I mean, let's be real. If they get a couple other dynamic playmakers on the outside, it changes, I think, how you're going to look at this team offensively. Because that's the one thing, like, outside of Diggs giving up that long touchdown pass, like, I mean, and that's not happening every week. Like, I just don't think they have that on their roster right now.
Tell me this. You guys would know this better than anybody, being former players who played at the highest level. What's the difference between a 500 football team and a team who's winning 10 games going to the playoffs? It's a couple of breaks that go your way, right? Like, there's a couple of things that go your way during the course of the season.
There's a stronger correlation to winning, though. Just like there's a stronger correlation to losing. There's a reason why the same teams generally lose. Every once in a while, you'll see a team that generally loses find ways to win. You'll generally find it here and there, but that's not a consistent thing. So there's generally a constant that's there for teams that win. No team wins by accident. That's something that you can bet the bank on. You're not going to be an accidental 10-win team. It doesn't happen that way. So in the end, we can say 100% that a player here or a play there a kick there, a coaching call there is the difference between you being a 500-plus team or a sub-below 500 team. But that's what the National Football League is. That will always exist. So the idea of it.
But so hold on. So all that being said,
Yep.
Where do you? So how do you view this team then? Because you think they're what, a bottom third.
I view them for what they are. I mean, they're not a good team right now because their record says they're not a good team. And again, now while I will look at the games, which I have watched their games, and I'll say they are competitive. I do see good things out of the quarterback. The things that people have said, I do believe I see a lot of those things. I'm not going to go as far as to say I see all of the things that are being said about him, but I do see some of those things. I see a lot of positives. But that, you and I both know, Brady, you only get to go so long before I see the positives of what this can be. And now it's, okay, I've seen the positives. When you have to start winning now. When does that happen? Because to me, we could say, you know, they'll be better next year, and they might very well be. But what if they're not?
I guess I'd ask you this too. What roster in the AFC East, all right, would you say they're better than? Because there's only one I can think of in the AFC East. I'd look at the Patriots roster and go, that's a better roster than this team. Other than that, I think they've got a lesser roster than two of the four teams.
So you think Miami's got a better roster?
Yes, I do.
But I don't.
I would put that group of wide receivers with Mac Jones is an entirely different outcome.
Okay.
But here's the problem. Miami isn't playing very well either.
Yeah, they're bad.
But they're also really, really banged up. Like, no Byron Jones, no Xavier Howard, all this stuff. And we could talk about Miami, but I think that has as much to do with Brian Flores as anything else. All right?
Like, what do you
say
mean?
What you want. When you keep playing man-to-man coverage and you got backups in, and you all of a sudden make the Jaguars look like they're the second coming of the greatest show on turf, like, that's on you, dude. That's not on the players. Stop playing man-to-man coverage when your guys can't match up. You don't have your stars in there right now.
At what point in time is there a criticism of possibly Belichick not getting the games done, not getting the win?
I'm with Jonas. I think it's next year. I think they'll end up being a 6 or 7 win team again, and they'll end up feeling that pressure going into next year. And that's where people are going to look at Robert Kraft and say, how much equity does Bill Belichick have built up within the Patriots organization, within Robert Kraft's headspace? And by the way, like, as an owner, like, does Robert Kraft really want to start over? Or is he going to look at it and say, because here's the other thing you're presented with. Like, Josh McDaniels has stayed on that staff because I think it's presumed he's going to be the head coach when Belichick steps down.
Yeah.
If that's the case, though, isn't he just carrying on the same thing that you got right now?
Yeah. Yes.
So that might be an easier transition as an owner for Robert Kraft. But at the same time, he might be saying, it's easier for me, but that's what's best for my team. Do I not want to just break the whole thing down and start over?
I think you're hitting on what the major point here will be. See, I think he gets more than next year. I think he'll start feeling some pressure, more pressure personally than front office wise. I think he will get at least 2 more years.
And I also,
at least before you even start hearing the rumblings and the discussion points of, like, come on, Bill. Like, you got to win.
The only reason why I think it'll be a little bit sooner is because of how he's dealt with the media. That's where I feel like
they're going to get their revenge.
They're going to get – you know how this works, LeVar.
Oh, I do.
They're going to get their revenge on him because they're waiting for that moment. He's not going to have an off-the-field thing, but they're waiting for that moment where he doesn't have continued success.
And you can't be that condescending guy
Cincinnati.
It's like why did Terrell Owens not get in the Hall of Fame the first time around? Because those media members sat in that room and said, we'll let him wait a little bit. We'll let him wait to sit it out a little bit.
See, I think your biggest point is Robert Kraft probably at this point would be scared to death to start over.
Yep.
I think that's going to be the biggest reason. But if anything, he should be held accountable this season, because you got rid of your franchise guy the year before, and you should show that you're trending in the right direction, because that's what your history and your resume says you've been able to do.
Can we talk about something on the other side of this break? It doesn't have to do with this topic.
You want
to
tease it? You want to come on?
Well, let me just say this.
Come on, give it to me.
This was one of the most blatant examples, okay, in the sports betting world of someone being very aware of where and what the spread was and where the game was at. I'll just leave it at that. All right. Based on how this game ended, there is no argument to be made, all right, that there wasn't a thought to what the spread or over-under was, all right? I'll leave it at that.
That's next.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are going to have the scraps, and there are some details coming out of a Baton Rouge and the Ed Orgeron announcement that he will be parting ways with the LSU football team.
That party went bad quick.
Yeah, you know, some stories about old Ed O that are floating around out there.
You know what, though? That's his personal life, and I think this is such BS that they're dragging that into the limelight just because the athletic director wants to hire his own guy.
Yeah. It's
like that's what this is about.
I'm hearing they're going to go after Franklin.
Look, it's a credit to James Franklin and what he's done at Penn State. Yeah, I think certainly. That's a compliment, you know?
I just don't like everybody is trying to name him and go
it's
after
It's a credit
him.
To him, man.
I don't want that credit.
They should be undefeated right now if Sean Clifford doesn't go out of that game.
I don't want them to have the credit.
Yeah.
All right, well, I don't want it. We need them.
So LeVar, Brady Quinn, I mean, we are seeing.
I loved his tease. Yeah. I'm waiting for him to pay up.
Well, I'm pretty sure we all witnessed it. I don't know how many people were aware of it.
Well, I just think that that Brady Quinn is really blossoming in front of our very ears.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you talk about what he's done at Big Noon Kickoff. I mean, just a superstar through and through.
Stud.
Yeah. I mean, Friday he was on our show, LeVar.
He was on the
Herd. And then he was on Dan Patrick. After us.
Wow.
Then he was on the Hurt. I mean, like, it is literally Fox Sports Bradio now is being renamed Fox Sports Bradio.
Wow. I like it.
Because it is just, he is taking over. And now he's doing teases. I mean, be still my heart, Brady Quinn.
Be still my heart.
Here's the problem is we can't let this go by another day without acknowledging what took place on Saturday.
What happened?
In between the hedges, all right, in Athens.
Yep.
Georgia.
Yep.
All right. Did you guys see how that game ended?
Yeah. Yes. You know, listen.
Yeah. Just a 30-7 ball game with 7 seconds left. And Kentucky feeling the need to go for it and score a touchdown. Now, if you weren't paying attention to the betting lines, one would tell you, you know, that line might have opened somewhere around 24, 23 and a half, something like that. But it settled, I believe, around 21 and a half, 22 points. That was the spread between Georgia and Kentucky.
So they jacked it up.
I don't know about jacking it up, but Mark Stoops in the final 7 seconds was apparently trying to score a 23-point play
right
in that final 7 seconds.
Right.
So he was trying
to jack it up.
Huh.
I don't know if he was trying to jack it up. Oh, he jacked it up. I'm just saying I've never seen a team work with more urgency in literally the final seconds.
You're losing.
To lose by less than what you were predicted to lose
by. They wanted some reps. I don't understand. Like he wanted quality reps. He wanted his team to feel good about things.
That was ego. Like, that was pure ego.
Vested interest in what was happening. Now, if only LeVar, if only one of us on this show worked with Mark Stoops' brother to actually have him on the air to be able to get the answer to this scandal, I mean, I think that would really help everybody.
first off, let's not do that very dangerous, dumb thing of throwing out accusations like that, like you just did.
I'm not making any accusations.
All right. Well, you're calling it a scandal, which is kind of a hot button topic, so let's not do that. I'm just saying it was one of the more interesting times I've ever seen. A team, which we talk about this all the time, like player safety, is it safe for the players, all this stuff.
Right.
And yet, that was an instance, or that was a moment where I don't know what the justification is. I really don't. Like,
who was the coach recently? Brady, we talked about it. I remember the coach recently.
Yeah,
they were getting upset. They were getting shut out, and somebody attempted a field goal as time expired to break the shutout. Who was?
Well,
that?
I mean, we were talking about Baltimore and Denver.
Yeah.
That's what we were first
that
talking.
Was the
yeah, but there was a, in recent years there was a. I remember Jerry Glanville did that. Atlanta was getting shut out, and he kicked a field goal.
Yeah,
when they
but
were
you
losing.
Expected things like that from Jerry Glanville.
Okay, but there was a coach recently who did it, and you know it just makes you wonder. What's going on there, you know what I mean? But I what's wrong with it? I mean, come on.
Like I would love to see two head coaches fight at the 50-yard line. I think that would be so amazing.
I just would have loved to hear the justification for the play. Like, yeah. Like what was the thought behind it?
Like, we didn't want to lose by what we were predicted to lose by.
We didn't get shut out in the second half. I don't know what you want to say, but, I mean, it was one of the more interesting things that I've seen. I'm not even going to say bizarre, because I think bizarre is when you like can't come to any rational conclusion.
Can we come to one?
I think it was pretty apparent. Like they were like, we weren't supposed to win this one, but we sure as heck didn't lose by as much as everyone thought. Huh. Like there was that thought in the back of my mind.
Even with a garbage time score.
I mean, you want me to connect the dots? I mean, what is there a lot of in Lexington, Kentucky?
Betting.
Horse racing.
Okay.
I'm just saying, maybe there's a bunch of alums who are like, if you do one thing down there in Athens, just make sure you come back covering that spread.
Yeah.
I mean, so what you're saying is that you believe that there are some horse jockeys on the take.
Maybe Bob Baffert, like, made the call.
That's a good point. What isn't he suspended for a couple of years?
Exactly. Now he moved on to college football betting.
Old Bobby Baffert, you know, because he's, you
is
know.
Is he putting creams on the players? He's rubbing it on the legs.
Oh,
make
man.
Sure that they're ready to play.
It was a tainted urine sample.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
just
listen.
A little bit too much cream.
Yeah.
Too much rubbing.
Ew. it is.
That's an ew.
It is interesting. You know, when you see these situations pop up, you wonder. You know, does somebody know? Like, did you guys when you were playing? Let me ask you this, and just be
never
honest.
Knew.
I would have never.
You never knew what the betting line was.
I was ever so once. Ignorant. So ignorant to it, I never knew.
Okay, did you have any? Okay, it was fantasy football's gambling. Did you ever have anybody say, "Hey, man, I have you on my fantasy team. Can you, can you help me out here? Can you, like nobody ever told you what the situation
was?" Yeah, but
fantasy was barely getting going when I played.
It was just starting. But even then, like, obviously, you wanted to put up as many yards and points and touch. I mean, that's. To me, the dumbest thing is, "Oh, I need to help me for my fantasy team." Like, hey, bro, I want to help myself. I don't care if it helps you. Yeah. I'm trying to help myself and my team out. I'm not playing for my fantasy owners. You were playing to try to help, you know, help yourself out first more than anyone else.
By the way, you asked for it and you shall receive. Mark Stoops, the head coach of Kentucky, he talked after the game about that final play in question. Brady Quinn, here's how it sounded.
Mark, what was kind of your thinking on that timeout at the end of the game? What message did you kind of want to send with your guys with one more chance to punch it in the end zone there?
I don't know. I just, you know, really, I don't know about the message, but, you know, I wanted to score. You know, that's quality defense. And, you know, you don't know the way that things are going to play out the rest of the year. And we had an opportunity to score, so we did.
I mean, there's I believe they cut out the last part where he said, and also I had a rough day at Santa Anita the day before, so I needed to make sure that I made it.
I mean, they do. That is the best defense in college football, and I think, was that the third touchdown they've given up all year, I believe?
Something like
it. Defensively, yeah. I think they've only given up three touchdowns, not two of which are to Kentucky. So.
I mean, that could be a victory. That could be a sidebar victory. I mean, I don't have a problem with that.
You know, I mean,
I think it's funny though, just kind of the different levels of judgment. Like you could have got your kids hurt. Somebody could have got hurt. seriously. And then now the question is, why would you risk it? You know, losing by that much, why do you have your starters in?
He took a timeout.
Right.
It was like, no, he's doing this. Like, yeah, I mean, I remember when he took the timeout, I was like, oh, my God. Because here's the other thing that was in play. The over-under was set at 44.5. And obviously, at that point, like, had they scored quickly enough where I believe they did it when time expired or whatever it was. I could be wrong on that. But you were thinking to yourself, like, what's this? No, the extra point was blocked. That was what ended up happening. Because I thought they might go for two and then try to hit the over two, depending on how this was going to work out. If you're looking to score a touchdown, why not go for two and try to get the 15 points? But instead, they elected to kick the PAT, which got blocked and almost got returned potentially for the two-point conversion on the other way, which would have crushed you on the over there, too.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, I mean, who knows? And I'm not, you know, making accusations, but, you know, maybe he had Iowa on the money line and he was trying to figure out you had to make ends meet after that, you know, after that performance by Iowa this weekend.
That was just
the old blowhard Kirk. That's what happens, man.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.